Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Now, according to a new survey, a significant number of the public see drug-dependent people as having themselves to blame. And even though attitudes towards drug addiction have changed in the last 25 years, some stigma still remains. Eddie Mullins is with us now, CEO of Merchants Quay Ireland. Hello, Eddie.
Hello, Claire. Thank you for having me on the show.
Great to have you with us. And I know the key thing for you is that drug dependency is an illness, just like any other serious illness. You think it should be viewed as such, do you?
Absolutely, Claire. And I think, you know, the survey that was a very, very extensive survey, and there's some positives in it. But the stark, I suppose, piece for me was that over 30% of the people surveyed believed that people in addiction or drug dependent had themselves to blame. And I mean, I look across at any other chronic illness, and that's what addiction is. It's a chronic illness. And I would, you would be horrified if anybody was to suggest that somebody who was unfortunate enough to get cancer or to have diabetes, that they had themselves to blame. Yet there's a significant group of people who still believe that. 36% of people believe that tougher sentences should be used for people who use drugs. I mean, it's incredibly frustrating to think that in 2025, people are still looking at people who use drugs in that criminal through that criminal lens. Mm-hmm. So we are definitely pleased to see some progress in terms of stigma, and certainly attitudes are changing. But there's still a significant cohort of people who have a very poor view.
Does sentencing ever work for people who are using drugs?
No, sentencing doesn't work for people who are using drugs. And I think it's important to understand, and it can be very difficult to say this to people who have been the victim of criminal behaviour, but a lot of people who engage in criminal behaviour and have a drug dependency do so to, and I'll use the word support, the drug dependency, and it's a reality. So sending a person to prison who has an addiction will absolutely do nothing to deal with their addiction, and it certainly won't rehabilitate them in terms of their criminal behaviour. The only way you're going to break this cycle is to put extensive services in for people who are in addiction to support them. And that could be support them while they're in addiction, or it could be supporting them through the recovery programme. Mm-hmm. But that's the key.
I would imagine there are people listening to this who say, well, if you're in addiction and if you commit a crime, you should be punished for that, but then you should get the services that you need in prison. Maybe that's the way to come at it.
Well, I personally speaking, I think we need to look at alternatives to prison. I mean, our prisons are chronically overcrowded and struggling to provide services for people in prison. So adding more people to that problem certainly won't improve access to services. But there are, you know, restorative justice practices. There are alternatives to prison that need to be explored for people in addiction. Prison is not the place. Addiction is a medical problem. It's not a criminal problem. So, and it is difficult for people to take this on board, because, you know, people see criminality and drugs in the same kind of in the same sphere, but they're not. They're two different things. We need to address the addiction issue as much as possible, support people as much as possible. And I genuinely believe you'll see a decrease in criminal behaviour as a result.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is quite a big change, as you alluded to there, in terms of the number of people who believe that those who are dependent on drugs only have themselves to blame. I mean, that's changed an awful lot in the past 25 years. So it was 57% back 25 years ago in 2000, and now it's 30%. But what do you think has happened to cause that change?
And it has changed, Claire, and I certainly don't want to be cynical and suggest that it's not a positive development, that it's come down, but I would suggest that, you know, drug use is much more widespread across the community, and people are less likely to criticise recreational drug users, for example. So we know that, looking at the survey, a lot of people know people who use drugs, and probably less likely to stigmatise and criticise people who they know. So I think the people who use our services are a group of people who are very, very marginalised, who are... They present and they look like people who use drugs, and they are treated differently to people who use drugs at the weekend, who still look normal, still carry on and live their lives as normal as possible.
People taking coke on a night out.
Absolutely. So I think there's kind of a two-tier approach to stigma. There are people who are obvious drug users. We see them on the street and they experience, you know, stigma abuse on a daily basis. And, you know, one of the stats was people are afraid. 50% of people say they're scared of people who use drugs. And that's primarily because of the way people who use drugs, who are drug dependent, I should stress. That's primarily because of the way they look and present. But they are a group of people, from my experience, who are in really, really difficult circumstances. And the drug dependency is in many cases as a result of mental health issues, homelessness, poverty. We say this every day, and sometimes it becomes routine to say it. But the reality is, it's a lot of chronic drug use or drug dependency is based on really difficult circumstances and trauma, from an early age, you know, from childhood, and it manifests itself in addiction and other chronic issues like mental health. And there's no, there's no getting away from the fact that we'd say drug dependency is primarily an issue in socioeconomic deprived areas. It's not the same issue in middle class Ireland as it is in areas where there's a lot of deprivation, there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of trauma. So they are connected, and they're connected for a reason.
Yeah, it is a bit depressing that you think that we haven't become more compassionate in the last 25 years. It's just that more people understand the problem of drug use or see it more prevalently in their own community. So that's why they're saying they're not going to stigmatise somebody for doing it or being addicted.
Yeah, I think we want to be more compassionate. I think, and people will express, you know, positive sentiments towards people in addiction, and we want to support them. But really what we need to do is invest heavily in supports for people who are in addiction, because like any other illness, if we look at the strides we've made in cancer care over the last 20 years, it's because there's been significant investment. And the same thing needs to be done in addiction. We need to provide services, wraparound services, like, for example, the medically supervised injection facility that we've recently opened.
Yeah.
That facility allows people to take drugs under a medical supervision. It gives us an opportunity to build a relationship and to try and steer a person in a particular direction. It's not the answer for all drug treatment services, but it certainly meets the needs of a significant cohort of people who are very marginalised.
Well, listen, while I have you, can I ask you how that is going? Yeah. Because I know we had a couple of conversations about it in advance of it opening, and that was always your hope, that you would get people in, you would treat them well, and then the byproduct of that would be that they would engage with your services. Is it working?
So it is working, Claire. We've had over 6,000 visits, over 600 people used the service so far. And during their engagement, we've been able to refer people to our mental health team. We've been able to refer people to our GP service. And we've been able to address other underlying medical conditions that we wouldn't have been aware of and wouldn't have been presented to us if those people were on the streets. We've had 94 non-fatal overdoses in the facility since it opened. Now, it's very important.
In the facility?
In the facility. And then, so what happens is, and maybe some people are not aware of what would manifest a non-fatal overdose. So a person who injects drugs can become unresponsive. In the past, on the street, that always resulted in an ambulance being called, paramedics attending, often the guards happened to be called, and a pretty chaotic scene on the streets throughout the city. That was a regular occurrence. Since this facility opened, we've only had to call an ambulance once. So every other time we've been able to address the issue with our medical team, we've been able to administer naloxone or oxygen or a combination of both if it was required.
So your staff,
that's a really positive development.
Your staff are not checking what people are taking, are they?
So we don't test the drugs, but what we do is we ask a client when they come in to show us the drug they have. If they don't have a drug, ironically enough, they can't come into the facility. So when they come in, they will present the drug. They'll do a quick questionnaire with our project workers and then go into the injection facility, and then they will be supported by a medical team there. And when I say supported, there may be issues around finding veins, there might be issues around how the person is presenting, and they will be advised and encouraged and supported along that process.
Mm-hmm.
And when they've injected the drug, then they will go into our aftercare room and they'll spend about 30 minutes there. And during that time, they'll be monitored again by a nurse and they'll be monitored by a project worker. And that's where the real work, in my view, starts, where the conversation starts around what life could look like. And we're not naive to think that we are going to bring everybody who uses the medically supervised injection facility on a recovery journey. But if we can get one or two or three, if we can get the conversation going, what life might look like, that's an additional success. But I suppose to stress, the supervised injection facility is there to save lives, is to prevent fatal overdoses and to support people who were traditionally injecting on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And the other outcomes are a bonus, Claire, really. They're a bonus to get a person into recovery and to get a person into a different path.
Yeah,
the primary objective is to save lives.
Is it fair to say, and I don't know the answer to this, but the new generation of drug takers are not injecting, am I right?
So at the moment, the drug trend at the moment is very much around cocaine and crack cocaine. And you will see evidence of people smoking crack cocaine on the streets. Crack cocaine can be injected, but at the moment it's primarily smoked. And I suppose that brings the next question in terms of, after this pilot phase is completed for the medically supervised injection facility, should we be looking at a consumption room where a person can consume other drugs? And we will look at across other jurisdictions where supervised injection facilities started, and they've primarily all transitioned into consumption rooms. And that kind of follows the trend in drug use. Now, Claire, I have to stress, because it sounds like I'm promoting drug use. Absolutely not. We see the absolute devastation every day of drug dependency and drug use.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that these people need to be supported and helped in any way we can. And we see, once you can get a person into a facility, you have an opportunity then to start building that relationship and start, you know, maybe helping a person on a journey. If people are completely marginalized and isolated and left on the streets and kicked and abused, you know, that only makes the problem much worse. It only makes, and you're only kicking the problem down the road, the can down the road.
And listen, some of the objections before the pilot program started were around whether you would have drug dealing happening outside the facility. Has there been any uplift in that sort of behaviour there?
No, so 90% of the clients who use the facility were clients of Merchants Quay prior to this. So they were using our harm reduction, our GP service, they were using our open access service. And I think that's what makes the service unique, is that there was a co-location of services. So there was food, there was showers, there was GP, dentist, all of those services, in addition to the MCIP. So we all our clients that use the facility are clients, for the most part, who have used it. We haven't seen any real increase in terms of activity on the street. But it's something we're very conscious of. We work with organisations like Ishke on a daily basis out in the community to try and address issues if and when they arise.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do arise. That's the reality. And we wouldn't minimise the impact facilities like Merchants Quay have on the community.
Right.
But we work with the community to try and address
And
those
listen,
issues.
Brian O'Connell, our reporter, brought us a story one morning where there are calls for a similar pilot project to start in Cork. Are you aware that that's moving ahead at all, or would you be supportive of it?
Well, I'm not aware of what the status is in terms of that that idea, the project that it might happen in Cork. I've had lots of conversations with people who run services in Cork, and lots of public representatives from Cork have come to see the facility. So there is a momentum building around the notion of an additional centre in somewhere like Cork.
Mm-hmm.
I think we must allow, because there's a strong evaluation piece here, we must allow the 18-month pilot in Merchants Quay take its course, so we can really assess and drill down and look at the data and look at the benefits of a facility. I don't see anything happening before that. I'm not the decision maker, I'm not a policy maker, but you're asking me as Eddie Mullins, I can't see a facility opening Cork until the evaluation piece on the one in Dublin is completed. That'd be my view.
All right, so we're a bit away from that. Eddie, thanks so much for talking to us. Eddie Mullins there from Merchants Quay Ireland. Back after this quick break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.